This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Beat me up on the mamas of all mama shit.
Hey, I'm looking through my telescope and I see a mothership. Is that you? Beam me up.
Hey, D.A., I'm thirsty, man. Could you beam me up for a cold one?
Hey, D.A., what's going on, baby? Stop me off and beam me up.
D.A., what's the dealio? Permission to get in that mothership.
Is my window seat still available? Beam me up.
What's going on, D.A.? Hey, man, I need you to do me a huge favor. My coworker's a jerk. Oh, just beam me up, man. Get beamed up. Everyone else has. It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
And we come to you live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios. O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. Welcome back, everybody. Coming up this hour, Nate Burleson's going to join us in about 38 minutes from now. So at 40 minutes past the hour, Nate Burleson, NFL Network's Good Morning Football. You watch him Sundays on the NFL on CBS. We'll talk to him about Mike Mitchell's comments. Mike Mitchell of the Pittsburgh Steelers going off yesterday. Very angry about the state of the NFL in terms of penalties and fines, suspensions when it comes to defensive players. And he has a point. He was discussing how difficult it is because he could get suspended. He could get fined because he's trying to make a tackle and the quarterback throws an errant pass. The quarterback or the wide receiver are off, and then where he's trying to target is off, and he's the culprit that gets flagged or suspended. And he mentioned media members that call him out as being classless or have no integrity or is a dirty player. And he says, you don't even know me. You don't know how much I do in the community. You don't know how much I give to charitable causes. You don't know how many kids I help, which I think are all totally fair frustrations from a defensive player in the NFL. But I think the timing's really bad when you have Ryan Shazier, your teammate, lying in a hospital bed, not knowing whether he's going to walk or not. I find it hard to come down too hard on the NFL for trying to be safer when things like that happen. And yes, there's an inherent danger in playing football and playing in the NFL where players are grown-ass men. At the same time, I can't crucify a league that's trying to do better for its players health-wise when I crucify that same league for not having done better for its players health-wise in the past. In the NBA, how about the Cavaliers? LeBron scores 32. The Cavs beat the Kings 101-95 last night. Cleveland has won 13 games in a row. That is the longest winning streak now tied in Cleveland Cavaliers history. And this is a year of streaks. Remember, in Cleveland, the Indians winning 22 straight games. Kevin Love, 18-13. How about Jeff Green? The forgotten Jeff Green, 17 points off the bench. And the Cavaliers get this win. So let's start here. Reports of the Cavs' demise early in the season were greatly exaggerated and certainly premature. It's so easy as a narrative to want to wait on the death of the champion and speed it up because it means fresh blood. It's a better story. Now, the more boring story is good team remains good. Great team remains great. Champion remains champion. Just not as interesting. We want to see the champs go down. We want to see new blood. That's the better story. That's more interesting. So the Warriors, can they be taken down now that Steph Curry has a twisted ankle? Will they look any worse? The Rockets actually tied atop the Western Conference standings. maybe Houston, this is a year that they could end up getting over that hump of the playoffs. That's a fresher, cooler, more fun story. Same thing with the Celtics. The Celtics won a franchise record in a row, and it was a great story. Oh my goodness, they're doing this without Gordon Hayward. Oh my goodness, look at how well they're coached. Oh my goodness, they're ready to take off. Oh my goodness, they're the new power in the Eastern Conference. It's inevitable that they are going to win the Eastern Conference for years. That's what you said. 16 games in a row. The Cavaliers now 3 games away for the Celtics win streak. And this story is more yawn. Right, the Cavs are still good. Okay, they still have LeBron. It's not as interesting, but it's as important. You see, the Celtics winning 16 games in a row is significant because they do that without Gordon Hayward, and they are well coached, and they are well balanced. And Kyrie Irving was at times in the middle of that streak showing himself to be the man. But winning 16 games in November is not much different than winning 13 games in December. Except the Celtics, oh my goodness, they're here to take out the Cavs. They're the next generation of champions. Whereas the Cavs, yeah, well, they're supposed to be good. I mean, they have LeBron. They've won the East 3 straight years. They're the heavy favorite. This is significant because all of those reports of the Cavaliers, this being the end, and they look old, and they look scattered, they look awful, look stupid, looks premature right now. And they don't have Isaiah Thomas. Imagine what this team looks like when Isaiah Thomas finally comes back. Now, maybe there is some type of transition period where the Cavaliers are not smooth. They are clunky because they're trying to work Isaiah into the offense, and that necessarily doesn't necessarily go so well. Certainly could happen. But if you were ready to write off the Cavaliers because either A, you are sick of LeBron, or B, you just wanted a new champion, sorry, the Cavaliers look just as good as the Celtics did last month. Just as good. In fact, they look better because they have LeBron and Boston doesn't. Right now, the standings in the Eastern Conference, as you might imagine, Celtics are the one. Cavaliers are the 2, Raptors 3, the surprising Pistons 4, Sixers 5, speaking of fresh blood, Bucks 6, Pacers 7, Wizards 8. 855-212-4CBS. Chris is in Tulsa listening to CBS Sports Radio's 1300. What's up, Chris?
Good morning, DA.
Good morning, buddy.
Can I get beamed up?
You know it. What you got?
Thank you, sir. I think that the legit duo, the legit threat in the NBA right now is Houston. Who's been the top of the league in the West but never able to climb that mountain? Houston and L.A. Now, Chris Paul is with James Harden. They are legit. Golden State, they're like, you know, Durant is turning into the aggressive. The inner turmoil, LeBron and D-Wade are clicking like never before. They're going to go to the playoffs. I do believe the Cavs will be in the Eastern, but I do not believe the Warriors will make it out of the playoffs. God forbid they play the Thunder. Durant, Green, they're all going to get ejected because they got 2 rings and they've been there 3 years in a row. It's just starting to get like, yeah, this is us. We belong here. Well, there's 7 other guys who want to take you out.
I'm worried about the Thunder chemistry-wise. I don't understand why they are sub-500 at this point of the season. We're a couple of weeks away from Christmas, and they still haven't hit 500. That bothers me. You have too much talent on that team, way too much talent, with Paul George, Carmelo, and, of course, Russell Westbrook to be this bad. But I'm guessing they'll figure it out enough, certainly, to get into the playoffs. But I don't know if I can take them seriously as a contender to knock off anybody or even to give the Warriors any type of series if they do end up matching up, although that would be a pretty fascinating 1-8. I do think, though, that you're right about Kevin Durant having now to be the man to carry the Warriors. It's one thing to do it over the course of one series, like he did in the NBA Finals. It's completely different to do it over 82 games. Now, he's not being asked to do it over 82 games necessarily because Steph Curry had been healthy, but I don't think that KD is wired to be that type of guy. He's too sensitive. He worries too much about what people think. He's got rabbit ears. He is obviously insecure about how the offseason went when it comes to him lashing out at critics, using a second burner Twitter account, all that type of stuff clearly gets to him. And so now Steph's out for 2 weeks. Not the end of the world. It's only 2 weeks. He's back by the end of December. But what happens if the old ankle stuff comes back with Steph and that his ankle's not quite right or it loses some of his effectiveness? Is Kevin Durant wired to be the man? Now, he's been great. He really has. He's been great. 35, 11, and 10 in their win over Charlotte. So he can step up. But again, it's different to do that against the Hornets in December versus doing it every night, every game, all 82, all of the playoffs. Steph's going to come back. But if Steph's not 100%, does KD have the type of mental strength it takes to be the leader of a team that won a championship without him and won 73 games without him? I hope the Rockets can keep this up because it certainly makes the West far more interesting. I hope they do. I wonder, but I wondered early in the season, before the season began, whether sharing the basketball between those two guys, high-volume guys, Chris Paul and James Harden, could work. Right now, it's working. They're 18-4. Best record in the West, tied winning percentage-wise with the Warriors. Actually, they're better than the Warriors, winning percentage-wise. 18-4 right now. Tweets coming in, DA on CBS. Chino tweets, they can't let Goodell go on in the midst of all these capers, misdeeds, and turmoil. Think of how much he knows. Keep your friends close and your enemies closer. You know, I don't think that the owners necessarily need to keep Roger Goodell around because he knows too much. They're keeping Roger Goodell around because their only priority is money. Nothing else truly matters to them. Integrity of the sport, below money. Tradition of the sport, below money. PR nightmares, below money. Handling domestic violence, suspensions, all that, below money. Whether we think he's a boob or not, below money. All that stuff, oversaturation, it's below money. Ratings erosion, below money. Kneeling for the anthem, below money. The owners, the 32 owners, do not value anything more than their profit margin. And you can't argue with Roger Goodell's profit margin. It's the one thing that is not a hole in his resume. You can pick apart everything else, and you can certainly criticize, and I have, how he got to that profit margin. But what you simply cannot, the most unassailable part of Roger Goodell's resume is, from the time he took over to now, the league has never gone through more financial growth. If you charted it and you saw the growth adjusted for inflation of the NFL from 1925 through 2017, there is no time period in NFL history where financial growth skyrocketed like it does now. We're talking about billions of dollars every year they're richer. It's the only thing. It's not the only thing that matters. It's the most important thing that matters to those guys in that room. And so they're going to keep them around. You might argue, DA, anybody could make money with the NFL. Yeah, but they don't want to find out. Because if that's wrong, then they got less cash coming around.
It's about the money. M-O-N-E-Y-D-A.
When we come back, sound check, your best audio of the day, including Jalen Ramsey going off again, a very vocal young Jaguars corner, and Herm Edwards explaining whether he knew the Sun Devils were the Sun Devils. We're already there. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
It's the most wonderful time of the year. We count down the 12 DAs of Christmas. Here's a moment that got stuck in the chimney.
I'm trashing my name because it hurts. That, you know, even though I'm moody and all over the place and emotional and everything, but, you know, my name's Hurricane Jen.
Yes, it is. Hurricane Jen calling up this year, wanting to change her nickname, but unfortunately, that one's going to stick. It's kind of like the opposite of when people were calling Peyton Manning the sheriff. You're like, that was never a nick. No, that was never your name, man. The sheriff, the sheriff, the sheriff. I'm like, Peyton Manning's been playing for 15 to 20 years, and I don't ever remember him being called the sheriff. Suddenly, he's the sheriff with his final season in Denver. See, it's the opposite with Hurricane Jen. You can't change out of that nickname. That's the one you were stuck with. It's not like at the end of your career, you're like, oh, suddenly I'm Funny Jen. No. Jumping Jennifer. Mm-mm. It's going to be Hurricane Jen. Zach is next up. He's in Pittsburgh, listening on the HD to KDKA, HD3 to CBS Sports Radio. What's up, Zach?
Nothing. I want to talk about Chazier. Oh, yeah, beam me up, DA.
Okay, man. What you got for me, buddy?
All right, I wanted to talk about, I've been listening to The Fan lately, and I wanted to say about Chazier. I haven't gotten any updates, whatever I know. He's in Pittsburgh, but I've been hearing a lot of stuff from the Steelers. They've been, Paul Zeiss had put the pre on yesterday, and he was saying that there's no updates, but, like, he's doing better, I believe I've heard, and, yeah. Hopefully Shazier's okay, and let's go Steelers.
No kidding, Zach. Hopefully Shazier is going to be all right after this, because I've talked about this before. Whether it was Dennis Byrd, Mike Utley, Eric LeGrand, Kevin Everett, guys that have been paralyzed on the football field, is just the most sickening feeling. I think it's because it's so traumatic and it's so instant that walking can be taken away from you. It's just too much for me to even handle. So I hope Shazier is going to be okay, but he was transported to a Pittsburgh hospital yesterday. I really sincerely hope that he's going to be doing better and improve, because, man, your heart just goes out to a guy like that. 855-212-4CBS. 855-212-4227. Twitter, DA on CBS. Time for your best audio of the day.
CBS presents this program in color.
An educated person can't think he's going to get a recruit by strippers coming in.
They can fire you, but they can't eat you.
And they run through our ass like through a tin horn, man, and we could not stop them.
The audio you need to hear. It's DA Soundcheck.
We start with Spags, Steve Spagnuolo, who was once a head coach before with the St. Louis Rams. Now he's the Giants' interim head coach. Discussing telling Geno Smith you're getting benched again because we're bringing Eli Manning back to start.
I have a great deal of respect for Geno Smith and the way he reacted. He was a man. He obviously didn't agree with the decision, but he is a team player. And he told me that he was going to go forward and wants to be a part of this.
There is a fine line between being a great competitor and being confident in your abilities and being a dope. And I can't tell where that line is with Geno Smith, because you want Geno to want to win the job. You don't want him to just be happy being a backup. You want him to be confident he can win football games. But you also want him to realize that the guy starting ahead of you has won two Super Bowl MVPs, and you couldn't even basically stay a starter for a poor New York Jets team. Where is that line with Geno Smith, Mraz?
I just think there's a better way to. Maybe he did answer it better, and Spagnuolo translated it wrong. I think the correct answer, if you're Geno Smith, when being told that, is, "Hey, I get it. This is Eli's team, but I felt I earned enough. I felt I did enough to keep the starting job."
But there's been more than one of these incidents.
Yeah.
Where he was asked upon Eli getting benched what he felt about it and said, I've been there.
I've been there. No, you haven't been there. It just, he doesn't
like,
have.
Like, Geno Smith lost his job because either he was really bad or he got punched in the face.
Right.
Those are the two ways he lost his job. Eli Manning lost his job because the franchise is on fire and the guy is a Ring of Honor guy.
There's just no grasp of reality. Like, again, it's not I've been there. It's, hey, I've lost jobs before, too. It's a tough thing to go through. There's a certain wording a quarterback has to have, I think, with the media or with coaches, and Geno Smith just misses that. And then he already had to apologize on Monday about being a distraction of the Giants with his Rex Ryan Coward comments.
Yeah.
Like, it just, what goes through his head?
Geno is caught in Geno world. Everything that he views is through Geno lens. He can't see outside of that. And so, in getting benched, he just looks at it like, yeah, I was once benched, when you're like, well, the situation was completely different with Eli and you. And getting benched again, and then Eli coming in, is completely different than anything you've ever gone through. And the one time he's a starter, he has a post-game press conference because the backup quarterback never has a post-game press conference and immediately has to go into lighting into a former coach. I mean, you know, it's just always a Geno lens, and I think that's why a lot of teams would never trust him being the franchise guy.
And remember last week when Eli Manning was benched, he was unhappy about it, but he said, hey, I'm going to keep helping Geno, I'm going to keep helping Davis, and this is, you know, the job I have to do. Where was Geno Smith saying, hey, I want to keep working with Eli and, you know, let's help to make this team better? Like, standard stuff like that should just be said, not, oh, I'm disappointed with losing this job now.
But Spagnuolo says he's a big fan of Geno Smith. It sounded like Ben McAdoo and Jerry Reese were fans of Geno Smith. So, I don't know, maybe there is something there.
I'm starting to think Geno Smith's probably a good guy, has enough talent to be a backup quarterback, just has no filter and doesn't think before he talks, would be my best way of putting it.
Or maybe thinks he's better than he is?
Yes. Slight arrogance.
Jalen Ramsey, the young, vocal, aggressive Jaguars corner, saying, hey, media, we're not as bad as you think.
Can it be a statement game for you guys? Because of who they are?
What's their record?
8-4, same as yours.
All right.
Former Super Bowl champs, perennial playoff contender.
All right, we were sorry last year, but we're not this year. We ain't talking about last year. Y'all gotta stop, man. Y'all gotta stop doing that, man. In the media, y'all do that too much. Y'all be hyping people up. Y'all hype teams up. Stop doing that, man. Y'all gotta stop doing that. It's a new year. It's a new week. Everything. It's new big dogs in around the NFL. Y'all gotta stop doing that. Stop hyping people up.
That was the Jaguars corner Jalen Ramsey as Jacksonville will host the Seahawks this weekend. Look, there's certainly an element of punk in Jalen Ramsey in the way that he has gone after A.J. Green and talked about guys and never stops talking. And I don't think he's got a lot of respect from veterans that play him. But you kind of need some of that when you're trying to change a culture of the Jaguars. Like, all right, we were sorry last year. We ain't sorry no more. It's true. Jaguars are 8-4. They're not sorry anymore. Last year, they would be 4-8. Every year, they'd be 4-8. This year, they're 8-4. Sometimes you need guys like that that are like, not the same old Jaguars. We don't play like the same old Jaguars. Not carry that over into other years. And finally, Herm Edwards was introduced as the newest head coach of the Arizona State Sun Devils. Had that awkward joke, quip, about Devil Digest. He don't mess with no devils because he's Catholic. People had to point out, well, you're the coach of the Sun Devils. He was on Tiki and Tierney here on CBS Sports Radio and watched across the country on the CBS Sports Network. And they asked him, you do know you coach the Sun Devils, right?
Yes. Are you kidding me? I got recruited from Arizona State. Frank Kush recruited me. It's funny. Look, I'm messing with the guy.
I know you are, but why do they put headlines that make you look like you don't know who they call?
They were clowning you a little
bit. Goodness gracious. Look, I knew Arizona State before half those people, whatever they were tweeting, they weren't even born when I was
that's a good
watching
point.
Arizona State and getting recruited by those guys.
Yeah.
So do I think that Herm Edwards knows that he's the coach of the Sun Devils? Yes. Do I think he signs up and understands I'm the coach of the Arizona State Sun Devils? Yes. However, what I also know, because I covered Herm for his 3 years in Kansas City, is that he takes the podium looking to put you on the defensive because he's very comfortable. And he is going to be asked tough questions. And so he tries to either win over the room with jokes or puts you on the defensive because he doesn't really want to answer tough questions. And once you see through the charade, you realize he stops making sense all of the time. And so in trying to joke or in trying to deflect, he often sounds like he doesn't know anything. And sometimes he doesn't. In this case, yes, I think he knew he's the coach of the Sun Devils. But because this is his tact, he oftentimes sounds like a boob. When we come back, Nate Burleson, Good Morning Football from the NFL Network. And also, of course, you watch him Sundays, NFL on CBS. We'll talk to him about Mike Mitchell's explosive comments. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
We are the glitch in the simulation.
Get the empanada shells at your local grocer. Mm-hmm. Usually find them over there, you know, in the freezer section with some of the, ethnic, I think they call it foods.
I think that's right.
DA on CBS Sports Radio.
Welcome back, DA, with you here on a fine Thursday. Remember, you can take us with you wherever you go on your phone, either by streaming us, use the CBS Sports app. Watch us at watchda.com or listen to us on iTunes. Injury report brought to you by the Salt Institute. Taking a look at the latest injuries. Saints running back Mark Ingram, game day decision tonight. He was held out of full team drills for the second straight day yesterday, toe injury, but looks like he's going to play tonight. What a 1-2 punch that the Saints have at running back with him and Alvin Kamara. Heck, even if Ingram can't go, it means Kamara gets more carries, and I'm sure Kamara would love that because, as Sean Payton has said, the only thing holding Kamara back from being the offensive rookie of the year is Sean Payton's game plan because he's got to get Ingram touches as well. The Bengals have placed rookie wideout John Ross on IR, ending his very disappointing season. Ross recovered from a shoulder surgery late in training camp, injured his knee in late preseason, returned in week two, but was benched early. He missed the next several weeks of practice after re-injuring the knee. A disaster of a year for a very highly drafted wide receiver for the Bengals. Did you know salting and clearing winter roads reduces accidents up to 85%? Guess it's true what they say. Everything's better with a little salt. AlittleSalt.org. Tonight's a big one, Falcons and Saints. We'll talk about that with Nate Burleson from the NFL Network. You can always watch the show at watchda.com. And Lindy writes in on our Scribble chat at watchda.com. DA, do you think it's time for the NFL to look at leather or soft-type helmets to combat concussions and leading with your head? I've heard this before, and I just can't wrap my head around it, pardon the pun there. But I just got to feel as though more protection around your head, even though sometimes it's used as a weapon, is always going to be better than less protection around your head. Would leather helmets prevent guys from doing damage with helmets? Yeah, but I still want to err on the side of more protection around the brain. Joining us here on the show is our friend, analyst for the NFL on CBS. And of course, one of the main anchors of Good Morning Football on the NFL Network, one of the best shows on sports television. You see Monday through Friday there, beginning at 7 a.m. Eastern time. And Thursday night football continues tonight, as we mentioned, Saints and Falcons on NBC, NFL Network, and Amazon Prime Video. Nate Burleson. Nate, good morning.
Good morning. Appreciate you having me on. Thank you for the introduction.
Yeah, my pleasure. It's always fun to catch up with you. And we were playing Mike Mitchell's comments earlier in the morning, and I could kind of understand his concern because he's a defensive player and they're cracking down on hits and throwing out suspensions. Do you think that Mike Mitchell has a case to be made there?
Yeah, he makes very valid points. You know, I was talking earlier this year on some of the hits that we've seen and flags were thrown and even guys were fined. In particular, there was a Joe Flacco play. And I was trying to explain to everyone that the intention of the hit never is really appreciated because oftentimes when an offensive player is going down or trying to make a move, he adjusts where the intended target is. So, you know, people might look at a certain play, and I think they don't give a guy enough credit for trying to keep his head out of harm's way or even trying not to injure a guy. Some of these hits look really bad, but imagine if you're running at something full speed, and About 10 yards away, you decide where you're going to hit the target. About 5 yards away, you lock in. 2-3 yards away, even a yard away, you're committed. But within a small amount of time, I'm talking about fractions of a second, an offensive player can adjust his body. I can try to duck. I can slide with my feet, slide with my head. I can move all types of ways and put my head or my helmet in harm's way. And it doesn't matter what I do last minute. If the defender is already made his decision, then he looks like the bad guy. He looks like the villain. So I understand what Mike is saying. He said, well, what do you want us to do defensively? You know, we're taught at a very young age to see a target hit a target. Now, I get it. You're not supposed to spear. You're not supposed to use your helmet. We get all the new rules. But what I do feel for is the defenders that go out there and try to do it the right way. They try to lean and use their shoulder pads and take their helmet out of it. But what happens is offensive guy panics. He doesn't know where to move. And then he moves his body or his head right in the way where the guy is trying to avoid hitting. And that's when it looks bad. And you know, that defender looks bad. And then there's flags on the field. And then there's fines being given out. And all the while, we're trying to repeat this mantra that we need the game to be safer. We need the game to be safer. So offensively, I can appreciate that they're trying to help us. But, you know, I grew up idolizing my father, who was a free safety, a hard-hitting free safety at that. And I come from the old school. I just feel like, you know, the more you try to protect us, the more you change the game. And we don't need the game to be changed too much, which is, you know, go out there, play some football. And I hate to sound harsh, but the reality is injuries are inevitable, and they're going to happen, and they're unfortunate. We just don't want the malicious ones like we saw in the Pittsburgh and Cincinnati Bengals game.
So I agree with a lot of that, and I think that Mike Mitchell makes a lot of sense in the restrictions that are put on defensive players. The one thing that I would quibble about is the timing of this, considering his teammate Ryan Shazier is lying in a hospital bed, and we don't know if he's going to walk again.
Right.
My heart sinks when I see guys like Shazier suffer those types of injuries, but I'm just a fan. I wonder about you, having played the game as a former player. What's the emotions that run through your mind when you have really, really devastating injuries that happened with Ryan Shazier, and you're trying to kind of cope with, as you mentioned, being old school about football?
You know, that was the worst injury I've seen in a long time. You know, it was jarring to see him, you know, make that tackle and then reach for his back, rolled over in his legs, just kind of sit there, you know, almost lifeless in a sense. And my gut was wrenching. I was sitting there with my wife, and I said a prayer. My 7-year-old daughter said, "Hey, Dad, what are you doing?" So I'm praying, and I explained to her what she was seeing. She did 2 prayers, and you know, every day I'm reading the updates and just hoping to get some great news, as if this is a relative of mine. And that's just it. These guys are relatives. They're family. So I understand what you're saying. The timing is off a little bit when you have your teammate who's sitting in the hospital with a very traumatic spine injury. But he's trying to get these things off his chest. And I believe, like, in moments of, you know, pure, raw emotion where you're hurting, the honesty comes out of you. It's just like anything in life. You know, you're in a relationship and something goes bad, that's usually when everybody puts everything on the table. And I feel like at that moment, that's what he was trying to do. Mike Mitchell was trying to basically, you know, just unmask himself and be very transparent and saying, listen, these are the problems. This is what's going on. And this is why, you know, we're going to continue to have issues. But the timing was a little off, you know. Then again, as a defender who has to get ready for another week, another game, when can I say it? When is the right place? You know, when do I have the right stage? So, what I do hope is that, you know, at some point we can find, one, a level of consistency and what's a bad hit and what will be flagged and what will be fined and what guys will get suspended for. And then over time, guys can continue to go back to the very basics of football, which is always seeing what you're hitting and removing your head from any hit. Now, there will be freak accidents. Like I said, for those who are listening, you have to understand, if I am trying to take my head out of something, an offensive player moves his body in that direction last minute because he's afraid of getting hit, I could end up if I'm a defender, I could end up injuring my neck because the offensive guy moves the wrong way. So these are things that we've dealt with for a long time. And, you know, hopefully we could change it. I don't know how soon it's going to be. You know, we shouldn't be shocked anymore that guys get injured. It's just like, you shouldn't be shocked if a guy is a boxer and he has delayed speech when he gets older, or a basketball player has bad knees, hips, and ankles when he gets older, or a pitcher, you know, has elbow problems, shoulder problems when they get older. These are all things that we sign up for. The one thing we just hope is that these freak accidents, they're far in between.
Nate Burleson joins us. Good morning, football, NFL Network. Tonight, we've got Thursday night football and a good one, Saints and Falcons. Everyone talks about the Eagles, the Rams, and the Vikings as Super Bowl contenders of the NFC. Do we have to put the Saints in that conversation as well? Are they in your top four?
Yeah, 100%. You know, the defense has played so much better. We were talking about the last couple of years how they were historically bad. And it seems like anything could go in there and put up 400 yards in the air. They can run all over this defense, and they've tightened up the pieces. Even some of the draft picks and guys they brought in are making an immediate impact. They're just different. They're a different defense. They smother the quarterback. They're flying around from east to west, sideline to sideline. And even though I'm the defensive backs are playmakers. Offensively, though, that's why you got to have these guys in the conversation of the top teams in the league. It's not just about the hot streak. It's about the style in which they're winning. I've seen Drew Brees go out and light up the skies like we've seen him do throughout his career. But what's even more surprising, and I guess more of a relief for Drew Brees, is that they can win games without him throwing a touchdown. I mean, that stat blew me away when we finished the weekend, and I'm looking at the Saints and what they were doing, and I saw that Alvin Kamara and Mark Ingram were having such a great game that Drew Brees didn't need to throw a touchdown. And that should be not only a message to their team that, you know, we're at where we need to be, but a message to everybody else. It's a scary thought that the Hall of Fame quarterback who could throw it with the best of them, some of the most pinpoint accurate throws we've seen over the last decade, doesn't need to use that tool. There's other tools now. And if you haven't paid attention to that duo, if you don't know what that running back room looks like, Alvin Kamara is the reincarnation of Marshall Faulk, and Mark Ingram is having yet another career year, busting off tough runs and the long ones. And that's what you need. You need a defense that can stop offenses and make plays when tested in the air. And then offensively, you got to have a quarterback that's capable of throwing, but only if you need him to throw. You'd rather have a running game going into the postseason because you're going to face these explosive offenses. You're going to face these top-tier quarterbacks. And what do you need to do? Control the clock. Keep them guys on the sideline.
You bring intellect, you bring energy to the TV 6 days a week, but I think your greatest virtue is versatility, because I saw you on Good Morning Football yesterday in overalls, shirtless, and then I see you on Sundays, and I work for CBS. I know shirtless and overalls doesn't play around the CBS executive, so I don't know if you could somehow figure out a way to bring the shirtless overalls to Sundays, but I'm telling you, the versatility, that's where your strength really lies, my friend.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Listen, we try to have fun in the morning. 5 days a week, going for 3 hours of TV. We try to tell every single football story you hear in every single other place in a way that's packaged funny and engaging. And, you know, people are really taking to it. I think it took a while for people to kind of take us seriously. But even within the funny segments and us going on our rants and dressing up in costumes, there will always be football nuggets and football knowledge within those things. So thank you. I appreciate that, man. I'm going to keep trying to bring the versatility. And I got the backpack filled with a whole bunch of overalls. I'm going to try to bring them out one day and surprise Coach Cowher and JV. We'll see how it goes.
Good day of playoff charades, too, today on Good Morning Football on the NFL Network. Nate Burleson, NFL Network analyst. See you Monday through Friday. Good Morning Football, 7 a.m. Eastern time. Tonight, Thursday Night Football continues. Saints, Falcons, NBC, NFL Network, Amazon Prime Video. As always, buddy, thanks so much, Nate.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Nate Burleson joining us this morning here on The DA Show on CBS Sports Radio. Sashi Brown has been fired as the executive VP of football operations for the Cleveland Browns, being reported by Ian Rappaport of the NFL Network. So it goes.
Brandon Wheaton's a bum. Colt McCoy's going to be gone. Jason Campbell, we just signed. He's a bum.
Look, I get why there's frustration within that organization. I understand why there's despair. I understand why it feels like it's once again stuck, rudderless, no place to go, no bright spot. But when you fire guys every 2 years, when you reset every 2 years, you simply can never build. And so now a new general manager will take over. And maybe he's going to look for a new head coach. Supposedly, Hugh Jackson is expected to return. And you're going to have an uncomfortable marriage of a GM and a head coach that he inherited. And a roster that, here's the thing, I mean, the Browns have been 1-27 since the beginning of last year. They've won one football game. And they're likely to go 0-16 this year. So they're going to be 1-31 more than likely over the course of two seasons. A disaster. But it still also feels like there's not a lot of talent. You know, if you could say, okay, well, they've got this, they've got that. It's like you've got Myles Garrett and you cross your finger that he's going to be great. You've got Joe Thomas at the end of his career. And everything in between seems like complete prayers. So I understand the frustration, but you restart everything every 2 years and you never get anywhere. Just it's a living nightmare. The NFL on Fox, one of the comedians involved every week is Rob Riggle. He's going to join us coming up next. Very funny guy. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.